Welcome to another episode of Fit to Teach, where every Monday we provide evidence-based health and wellness information to support teachers and school employees on their wellness journey. My name is Kyle Pfaffenbach. I'm an associate professor of health and human performance at Eastern Oregon University, director of the ELU Lab for Exercise Assessment Performance, which we call the LEAP. I'm joined by LEAP intern Nathan Marshall. What's up, Nathan?
What's up, Kyle?
For Fit to Teach, each week we provide a summary of a research paper that provides insight into some aspect of health and wellness, and we also suggest an achievable action item that teachers and staff can focus on for the week. The goal is that by trying these activities throughout each week, that healthy habits will accumulate, and you can find out what health and wellness activities are a good fit for you. So let's get into it. All right. So this week we are talking. So last week we talked about the benefits of resistance training, how to implement those. It went with some of our previous Fit to Teach, which covered aspects like making sure you get enough cardio, how you get that cardio, along with a dietary episode around protein. Mm-hmm. And now we're going back to the dietary side of things after doing an exercise one last week. And we're pulling information from this article called Intermittent Fasting and Metabolic Health. And this was written by a group. Primary author was Mark DeBoer. And this was a group out of Wake Forest. And there's a lot of information and misinformation about things like time-restricted feeding, intermittent fasting. Is fasting good for you? How much should you do it? What do we know about it? What do we not know about it? What are the proper circumstances to do it under? So there's just a lot of information around this. One of the reasons why we chose this paper is because one of the most prestigious kind of journals in the world, Nature, there was an article published in Nature, I think within the last 2 weeks, where they did these really big studies on intermittent fasting, actually in mice. So it's not totally applicable yet to humans. What they demonstrated was that there was a whole bunch of metabolic benefits. So health benefits, let's just put it that way. There were a bunch of health benefits to intermittent fasting in these mice, independent of weight loss. Mm-hmm. And I think that is really interesting because a lot of people take dietary approaches with this main goal of weight loss. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important to have in the back of your head as you're listening to this discussion that weight and where your body wants to be from a weight standpoint is a very fickle thing. And yes, oftentimes when we start being more conscious of what we're eating and we start eating healthier foods and we start exercising more, some weight loss can occur. But it's not a great goal for those things because it's highly individual and it's very different between individuals. So when I work with people from a nutrition standpoint, we never have weight as the primary goal. We can keep an eye on weight and we can have generally, I'd like to lose some weight, but those aren't the goals that you're going after because ultimately for a lot of people, you're going to get really frustrated. And so I want that in the back of our minds as we're having this discussion. And then yeah, I'm going to open it up to Nate today. Why don't you ask me and guide the discussion from a questioning standpoint about what you want to know about intermittent fasting, what you think that the teachers and people listening would want to know about intermittent fasting, and we'll just go from there.
Yeah, so I guess when I think of intermittent fasting, I think, like you said, it can be a hard topic to navigate because mm-hmm. it can lead into food habits, change your outlook, and it can be challenging. To think of things that way and missing meals can get challenging. And I've never done it myself. And I know we've talked a lot about, and most of my class are focused on like kind of a performance. And with that, doesn't usually. So I don't know much about fasting or how to properly do it. So this is a great way to set it up.
Sure.
If someone does want an intermittent fast, a general population, what's the first step?
Yep. It's a great question. So the first thing you want to think about is, okay, one, like we always say, start slow. Mm-hmm. And it's something that you get more used to the more often that you do it. So this is through personal experience, professional experience, and then also reading literature and seeing how people think about it, things like that. One, you want to start slow. You don't have to go into this really restrictive state or those sorts of things too quickly. Two, there's a few different ways to approach this and think about this. So the big background is that we've known for a really long time that chronic calorie restriction in organisms from yeast all the way to primates extends lifespan. So if you have, for example, a group of mice that you're researching and they're genetically similar mice, and you have 10 cages with communities of mice. Cages 1 through 5 get to eat whatever they want. And every day you come in and weigh what that mouse ate. And then the cages 6 through 10, for example, you provide about 40 to 50% of the calories that the mouse in cage 1 through 5 ate. And basically what you're doing there is you're saying that we're going to feed this other group of mice, chronically underfeed them calories. Now, they're not malnourished. That's really important. This is not like they don't have eating disorders. They're not malnourished. They're able to live. They're able to thrive. They just, their body adjusts to getting less calories than what they would eat if they were eating fully voluntarily. When you do that, you extend lifespan by 40 or 50% in most animal models. Now, it's much harder to study in humans, and the lifespan effects of humans are not nearly as clear or well established. One, it's a really hard thing to study when average lifespan is 75 years. And two, I also don't think if someone was like chronic calorie restricting, one, this is not something you should be doing with children. Children need their protein, their vegetables, they need their food throughout the day. But as stable adults or grown adults, that you're not growing anymore, you're not positive protein synthesis in that sense, in terms of long bone formation and those, that I don't think that chronic calorie restriction is going to lead to, for example, people living to 150 years old. Now, are there benefits to chronic calorie restriction in humans? And the answer to that is yes. There's been a bunch of really good studies. A lot of these come out of this place called the Pennington Research Center at LSU. It's this huge, like, metabolic disease and diabetes research center. And their long-term studies with chronic calorie restriction show a lot of really beneficial health effects, both with weight loss, but also more than just weight loss, like insulin resistance, like type 2 diabetes risk, cardiovascular disease, all these different things. So it's clear that there are some health benefits to this type of approach. Having said that, chronic calorie restriction is very difficult to maintain. And we want to talk about sustainable behavior changes that can be done for the rest of your life. So if you were to tell someone, eat until you're 60% full at every meal for the rest of your life, could most people in modern society sustain that? No. The other thing about it is that there's quite a few side effects in terms of you might have some increased metabolic health or decreased risk for cardiovascular disease, but you have really low energy, you're cold all the time, you're tired. Yeah. But there's consequences to being chronically underfed. In light of all that, some researchers are like, what if we just created like a caloric deficit intermittently? Because it's not like we evolved to have 3 square meals a day and unlimited snacking options all the time and bowls of candy at every desk and office that we pass. Like, humans are resilient. They weren't necessarily meant to just have unlimited food all the time.
Yeah.
So then the question becomes, could we get some similar benefits with doing things like intermittent fasting? Could we get similar benefits to that as opposed to being chronically restricted all the time?
Yeah.
And would that be beneficial? And it turns out that there's quite a bit of evidence that suggests that this is under certain circumstances. One of the most interesting parts about this is that when we give our body 18 to 24 hour break in nutrition, we lower some of the chronic growth signals that we're always stimulating as we eat chronically throughout the day. So this is something we talk about a lot in class, where food is more than just fuel. It's a signal. And every time we eat, we have an increase in certain hormones that tell our body, okay, we're at rest and we have lots of energy. So let's build, let's make stuff, let's turn on protein synthesis. And what fasting does is it gives your body a break from those signals to grow. And it gives a lot of your healthy cells time to rearrange themselves, do some what's called cellular housekeeping and clean things up. It reduces the amount of insulin in the system. It normalizes blood sugar levels and all these different types of things. And what we see is that when people implement this on a pretty semi-regular basis, we do see quite a few improvements, metabolic improvements. Mm-hmm. And it's not just all about weight loss. Mm-hmm. It's things like increased insulin sensitivity. You can increase your utilization of fat as a fuel. There's a bunch of different things that go into it, reduction in inflammatory signals. And that's a lot of what the book kind of talks about. You force your body to switch from using sugars into using more fat. You mobilize energy in a different way. It's less inflammatory. There's less demand on protein synthesis. And these are some of the interesting things that can occur with fasting.
I have a couple follow-up questions.
Yeah, of course.
So one thing that I remember this very vivid that you
had. I'll try and keep my answer shorter than that one.
You highlighted in sports nutrition was to not necessarily always think of fasting as in like missing meals, but like timing your meals a little differently. So if you eat dinner at 6:30 and then you don't, maybe usually you would have dessert at 9. Maybe you eat dinner at 6:30 and then you have your dessert right after. I know we talked about that before too, about how that can decrease the blood sugar spike. And then you don't eat breakfast till 8:30. And that's still a 14-hour fast. Is that still beneficial in terms of, is that kind of what I'm saying? Instead of eating your meal before bed.
Yeah, so this is a really good question. It brings up another point where we don't have all the information on what the best way is to implement these types of concepts.
Okay.
And the reality is that just like weight training, we're probably never going to, because everybody's different. Everybody responds differently. So there's a couple things that do appear safe to try and are interesting. So one of them is called time-restricted feeding.
Mm-hmm.
So TRE, or time-restricted feeding, is this time-restricted eating. Is this idea that I'm only going to eat between certain hours of the day and the rest of the time I'm not going to eat. So some people approach it that way, where they'll say, okay, I'm going to eat between the hours of 12 and 6. And that gives them every day, for example, an 18 hours without food and a 6-hour period where they're taking on these growth signals. And there is some evidence that this could be beneficial. And the issue that I have with time-restricted feeding, especially like the 12 to 6 or the 10 to 6 or the 12 to 8, is that it's, again, we want to try and set goals around things that we can sustain across a lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about it in the most extreme sense, most of the time when people think about going on diets, they think of it as a temporary thing. And we want to get out of that way of thinking. Mm-hmm. What we want to think about is, can I sustain this for the rest of my life? Now, whether you do or not is inconsequential. The fundamental question is, can I sustain this for the rest of my life?
Mm-hmm.
And if you say I'm only going to eat from 12 to 6 for the rest of my life, that's non-sustainable. And it doesn't take into account social events. It doesn't take into account certain situations. It doesn't take into account holidays and birthdays and breakfast and travel and all these different types of things. So you could go about it in that way and get a 16 or 18 hour fast on a daily basis. The long-term impact of that is not well studied. I want to be very clear about that. The way that is, there's two main approaches for intermittent fasting. And again, these are not, one of them is not as sustainable as the other one, where one of them is called alternative day fasting, where you literally eat one day, you don't eat the next day, eat one day, you don't eat the next day. Now, again, your body, we do know because we're based on a 24-hour cycle, but it doesn't know what's breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It's just getting nutrients. And so, for example, if you did your eating day would be dinner, and then you have breakfast, lunch, and dinner the next day, and then you don't eat until dinner the following day. So you never actually go a full day without eating, even though you go 24 hours without eating.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, so you can go dinner to dinner and you can do that. And some people find this effective, and that there's several studies that have shown alternative day fasting is well tolerated. People lose weight. But you'll talk to some people and say, there's no way. I can't go 3 or 4 hours without eating. I would just be like mentally, I'd be a wreck. I'd be all these different types of things. And there may also be some metabolic consequences to that where your body's metabolism makes adjustments. Now, food and food frequency around shifting metabolic rate is not well established. So there's a lot of myths about that. Well, if I eat more frequently, I have more higher metabolism. That's not true, at least based on the studies that we have up to this point. Mm-hmm. And then there are some real metabolic consequences to long-term starvation or severe under calorie restriction that you want to avoid as well.
Yeah.
Implementing these things in this way is, I think, really interesting. The last way to do this, and I think the way that a lot of people can implement this, is you look to get 18 to 24 hours without food once a week. Okay. And you see how you tolerate that. Now, don't start with 18 or 24 hours. You start with 12 hours, right? So you finish eating at 6 one morning, and then you eat breakfast the next day. See how you do. Pretty easy for a lot of people, right? Mm-hmm. And then the next time you finish eating at 6, and you eventually push that out to noon or 2, or you make it all the way to dinner, and that is your day of fasting. And there's, like I said, the data suggests that this is well tolerated. Mm-hmm. The hardest period of time is around meal times because our meal eating is on a circadian rhythm. But once your body realizes it's not getting food, it stops sending such strong hunger signals because it knows that's really counterproductive. If there's no food availability, and it doesn't look like there's going to be food availability, then it's counterproductive to keep telling you should be really hungry.
I have one more question.
Yep.
We talked a lot about protein intake and resistance training. And obviously eating is really important to maximize those gains. So how would you want to fit in?
Oh, super good question.
Yeah. Do you get what I'm...
Yeah.
Do you want me to finish the question?
Sure.
So how would you want to implement that 12 hour fast into a resistance training / endurance walking program?
Yep. So most recreationally active people are going to be just fine doing one day a week of some sort of activity while they are fasted. And it's not really going to set them too far back from a recovery standpoint. Okay. What I would say is that typically, you're going to be walking 5 or 6 days a week or doing some sort of cardio 5 or 6 days a week. You can mix it up. You can throw in some swimming, throw in some pickleball, throw in some whatever you need to do, row machine, biking. So again, variation is really important to getting response. But say you're on a walking program and Tuesday is your hill day and you're going to hit it hard. You wouldn't want to fast on Monday or Tuesday, right? But say you do a 45-minute walk on Monday, then you hit hills on Tuesday, and let's say 45-minute walk and a lift on Monday, you hit your hills on Tuesday, and then Wednesday is your choice day. You can walk a little bit if you feel up to it, or you're just going to take it easy. That's a great day to fast, for example. Yeah. And then, so if you eat Tuesday night, and then you don't eat until Wednesday night, you don't want to schedule another hill workout on Thursday. You want that to be like Monday, where you have some food in the system, you're going to eat dinner, you're going to eat breakfast, you can manage a 45-minute walk and a lift, but then your next big day is going to be Friday.
Yeah.
So if you had key days on Tuesday, Friday, Sunday, maybe Sunday's your long day, mm-hmm. right? So I'm going to walk for an hour and a half on Sunday. Mm-hmm. So Tuesday, Friday, Sunday, fasting day on Wednesday, light days on Monday, Thursday with light lifts.
Okay.
That'd be like a really good program. And then you just mix and match.
Okay. Yeah.
You just know that way you're going a little bit harder 3 times a week. You're doing maintenance 2 times a week. You're lifting twice a week and you have 2 days off Wednesday and Saturday.
Okay. Yeah. I'm also thinking of that graph that you showed us in class about protein synthesis versus protein breakdown, fasted versus eating before and then after. And I don't know if this is correct. And this might be some of my realm of expertise, but I'm just.
That's what I'm here for.
Lifting completely fasted where you're not eating before or after is probably not beneficial, right? You want to time it so you have food, either food in your system or your first meal after your fast would occur after your weightlift. Right. Is that correct?
Yeah. So for resistance training, it's interesting. You, and this may be more for, you do want to get some protein either before you lift or after you lift.
Yeah.
That's the main goal.
Mm-hmm.
So think about that. And if you're lifting at a random time during the day that's not around a meal, then make sure you take on a little bit of, have a 10 grams of a protein bar or something like that. There's a lot of really healthy, not healthy, how do I say this? A lot of minimally processed meal replacement bars in terms of macros now. Mm-hmm. So like in the lab here, we have these things called Rise bars. They're almond, honey, they're ground almonds, honey, and whey protein.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only 3 ingredients in those bars. They're called Rise bars. And you... one of those bars has 20 grams of protein, I think 10 grams of fat, 20 grams of carbohydrates. So it's like this balanced thing.
Mm-hmm.
And a half of one of those before you lift or half of one of those after you lift gives you 3/4 of 1. That gives you 10 to 15 grams of protein, which is enough to support that need that's required for post-exercise essential amino acids.
That makes sense.
If you lift fasted all the time, it's probably in the long term going to lead to some form of burnout or just not as much recovery and response and gain as you're trying to get.
Okay. That makes sense. That answers it.
So some of the things around fasting, and there's a million podcasts about fasting. There's a million, all these different things. And lots of people have these like really strong opinions and feelings about it. You need to do this. You need to do that. We're here to say, anybody that's telling you something with 100% certainty, I actually had a mentor tell me this. Anyone that tells you from a nutrition or training standpoint something with 100% certainty either doesn't know what they're talking about or is trying to sell you something. Now, there are certain things that are really like, we want you to exercise. We can say that with 100% certainty, but we're talking about more of these subtle things like,
yeah.
You have to follow this mode of planning. You have to do this for 30 days and then this for 30 days and then this for... What we're trying to do is build like lifetime healthy habits. And if you make it 1 day a week from dinner to skip breakfast the first day, first time you do it, first couple times that you do it, and then eventually get to where you can go from dinner to dinner to late afternoon, there seem to be some really positive health benefits for that.
Okay.
That's cool. A big takeaway.
Yeah, that helps. It's like a lot.
So that's the first discussion. We can talk more about intermittent fasting over the year. I'm sure we can revisit some of these topics. But again, it's one of those examples where weight loss isn't necessarily the main goal.
Mm-hmm.
We know that metabolically, there are these benefits that you get. We also know, and this should be very motivating for people, you get the metabolic benefits from working out, even though you might not be able to see them. It's happening on a cellular level and you get them every single time you work out. They can also recede away or go away if you stop stimulating the system in that way. So we want to create really sustainable habits around this, give you achievable action items that you can try and implement. And as we start to implement these things and these action items that we talk about in Fit to Teach, pretty soon, hopefully people are feeling better, handling the stress of work better, and living active lifestyles.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So we'll be back later this week for Classroom to Calm. Make sure that you tune in on every other Wednesday, also for Turning Point, where Scott Carpenter talks to teachers and staff in the LeGrand School District. We'll be back next week with another Fit to Teach. And yeah, hopefully you get caught up on your Fit to Teach episodes and start implementing some of this stuff. All right. See you around.